part of flyover country. This is Spin Sold Separately.
I'm going to have to be careful today, guys. I'm going to apologize in advance. This is a first for me. I am sitting down to do this show angry. I have, in the past, when I'm usually doing this at night, I've had time to simmer down a little bit, and it's probably better that way, but I couldn't wait this time. I am so angry. I am sitting here almost twitching because all I've ingested into my body this morning is coffee and angering news. So I'm going to apologize in advance for the tone of this one, at least at the offset here. I am furious. We're going to get into all of it. Thank you for joining me. This is Spin Sold Separately. I am JD. Did I tell you the outside world isn't going to make things any better? Did I happen to mention that in the last show? Because this week has done absolutely nothing if not 100% reinforce that opinion of mine. We got a couple different things we're going to get into here. All of them irritating, some of them heartbreaking. I know we had some fun in the past few weeks with the Christmas and New Year's episodes. Those were fun. I sat down to do those. I was in a great mood. And I hope that projected over the air. I just felt so good. It's such a heartwarming time of year when usually the best of humanity is brought out. You know, no matter what you're celebrating or what you believe, it seems to be a time of year when mostly the best of humanity shows through. Well, sadly, we're way beyond that, even though it's still only, what is today, January 10th? We are well beyond the best of humanity phase of the year, and we have fully and completely moved on to utter incompetence, dripping disdain. We're going to get into it here, and we're not going to waste any time. I don't have any flowery stuff to start the show with here. We're going to dive right in. First off, I want all of us to take a step back from whatever's going on in our personal worlds and give a thought and a prayer to the people of California and everyone who is dealing with these wildfires, which we are going to get into in great detail momentarily here. But I want to start the show by offering my most sincerest condolences to those who have lost their entire lives. There have been people that have lost their lives. And we start with those. The number I heard yesterday was 5 so far. I'm sure that is going to sadly get much bigger. But in addition to the people who have lost their lives, thousands of people have lost their quote-unquote entire lives, their homes, their family homes, their history, everything that was contained in that home, the memories they weren't able to grab as they were frantically trying to grab whatever they could, whatever was most important to them, when they were told they had basically minutes to get out of town before the flames reached their front door. These fires were moving so quickly and so unpredictably and so uncontrollably. People who 1 minute thought they were safe looked across to the hillside and saw flames jumping towards them hundreds of feet at a time. And people that thought, if not safe, that maybe they had some time to plan out what they were going to do, if they were going to evacuate, where they were going to go, who they were going to stay with, how far away would they go, what would they grab. You know, somebody on one of my favorite follows on X posted a good question last night. If you had 15 minutes to literally leave your home, almost knowing anything that you left behind was not going to survive, what would you grab? This person I follow, her handle is It's Gone Awry. How apropos. She's very insightful. She's a great follow. If you're on X, It's Gone Awry. She's funny. She's insightful. She's witty. She gets it. She's just one of those people that gets it. She's able to articulate things in a way that I might have bouncing around in my head, but I'm not smart enough to bring out in words as succinctly and eloquently as she does. It's gone awry. That she's the one I got that ponderance from. And I sat here for a good 5 minutes thinking, well, I mean, besides the four of us and our dogs, you know, what would I grab? If I had 10 or 15 minutes knowing anything I didn't grab was going to end up in a pile of ash, it really does make you think about what's important to you. You know, the material things that we tend to wrap ourselves up in, how much of it really matters? Well, it turns out not very much of it, because I got about 5 or 6 things down the list. Baby books, as many pictures from our cabin as I could get my hands on. I mean, you start getting beyond, you know, the real personal memories and family heirlooms. A lot of this material stuff, you know, it turns out doesn't matter much at all. It's something interesting to think about. But sadly, over 100,000 people have had to make those choices, where 1 minute they thought they were in a safe area, or at least not imminently threatened area, and then all of a sudden word gets out, no, this whole neighborhood's got to go. You've got minutes. Grab what you think you can in the next few minutes and get out, or you might not be able to get out. Some of the videos, I mean, they're all over, of people going down these roads and watching, I mean, just house after house after house up in flames. And, I mean, names that you recognize. This is happening to the average person, but it's also happening to people who, you know, at least I think of as almost insulated from the realities of the world. Ben Affleck, James Woods, just to name a couple that I know of that have lost homes. And I'm sure there's more. There are more names that you would recognize. There's athletes, there's directors, there's, you know, it's some very, very wealthy, powerful people in that part of the world they've lost whatever they had there. You know, a lot of those places a lot of those people have places in other parts of the world, other homes, but it's just sitting here in the cornfields, it's hard for me to even imagine watching some of the most wealthy neighborhoods in the country who seem to have endless resources, just helpless against the powers of Mother Nature and other factors that we are going to get into here momentarily that have contributed to this. But I want us all to, first and foremost, think of the people that are going through this. Pray for them. Pray for their safety. Pray for the safety of everyone affected by this. Because I can't imagine. I can't imagine looking outside and seeing a wall of fire coming towards my neighborhood. And with all this technology and all these resources and all this ability to predict and project and anticipate things and plan for things, that you see this wall of fire coming towards you at 60 miles an hour, 70 miles an hour, and we're powerless to stop it. I can't imagine. I cannot imagine what that is like. So, sincerest prayers to everyone affected by this, whether they live there, know people that live there. It really is something to see something like this happen, and for an entire area with those resources to be helpless in the face of it is absolutely heart-crushing. So sincerest prayers for everyone involved, praying for safety. Homes can be rebuilt, but the memories inside, heaven forbid, the people inside, they can't. You know, it makes me so sad that so many people are going through this right now. And I just want that out there first, because I'm gonna get very pointed about some of the things I'm gonna say in the segments ahead here. But I want it out there first that I pray for everyone's safety. This is that's the part of this where none of the other stuff matters. The politics, whatever. What religion you are, none of that matters. I cannot imagine what a lot of our fellow Americans are going through right now. Before we get into a very pointed discussion about what is going on in California, and yes, what has led to it, because that is absolutely a fair conversation to have right now. No, we are not going to wait. No, there isn't a time and place to have that discussion. We're going to have it right now. While those flames are still burning and people are standing in the street looking at the charred remains of their homes and what wasn't done to prevent it, or at least to mitigate the risk of it. But first, former President Jimmy Carter passed away over the last couple of weeks, and his state funeral was held yesterday. What I was able to watch of it, I thought was tasteful. I thought it was well done. His funeral was held at the Washington National Cathedral, and it was extremely well attended, of course, by, I don't care what your politics is. When a former president passes away, regardless of your politics, it's time to take a step back and honor the life of someone who found their way to the Oval Office. No matter what side of the aisle you're on, or whether you agree with Jimmy Carter's politics or not, whether you think he was a good president or not, it is a time to pay respects to someone who, I mean, he lived to be 100 years old. Pretty amazing. The longest living former president, I believe, in our history. I don't believe any president has lived beyond 100. Not many people do. So regardless of his politics, I mean, I watched about the first 20 minutes of it or so. The processional was, I mean, it was captivating. I mean, it really kind of stopped you in your tracks. One thing that stuck out to me was the very first people down the aisle at the cathedral were two people carrying candles and one person carrying a crucifix, as is typical of a Catholic service. I don't think any one of the three could have been older than 25, 30. They looked very young to me, and I know that the older I get, the younger people look. I just thought that was very, very captivating, that the three people with all the former presidents in tow, the current president, the first lady, almost all of Washington, D.C., and the family of the former president, and I don't know why that stood out to me. And, you know, it gave me hope for the future, I guess, that three relatively young people led that processional. And then, of course, all the priests and deacons, and they make their way down the aisle, and, you know, it was done very, very methodically. I mean, I couldn't take my eyes off it. And then they have the group of military members carrying the casket down the aisle up to where it will be placed during the service. It was, like I said, I stood in my living room and just, I for about 15 solid minutes, I didn't move. It was powerful. You know, I don't care what your politics are. I don't think Jimmy Carter was a good president, but that didn't matter in that moment. It shouldn't matter in that moment. The honoring of a life well lived, you know, you can't get to the Oval Office without doing some good things. I don't care what side you're on. So just, it was very powerful, that whole processional. And then Jimmy Carter's grandson got up and read a lengthy Bible passage, and it was very powerful. And thankfully, we were able to get to the third person that spoke before anything got political, at which point I turned it off. The second person to speak was Stephen Ford, son of the former President Gerald Ford, and he did something amazing. This is something I didn't know. Obviously, Gerald Ford and Jimmy Carter ran against each other in the 1976 presidential election, won by Jimmy Carter. This was in an era where political enemies, quote unquote, didn't appear to openly despise each other, as seems to be the thing to do these days. These two became very, very good friends, to the point that they agreed, and this is so unique, and it really made me stop and think about it. These two, who ran against each other in every presidential campaign is contested and can get ugly, and politics is an ugly business, especially when you're talking national politics and, you know, the two main party nominees in any election. It's going to get contentious. It's going to get ugly. These two, after all that, and after Carter defeated Ford in 1976, their lifelong friendship, in an unexpected way, sparked a lifelong friendship, to the point that these two agreed to speak at each other's funeral. Now, you think about that for 2 seconds, and you're like, well, how can you do that? Because by definition, if one of you is speaking at the other's funeral, how is that person going to speak at yours? Well, Gerald Ford passed away many years ago. He wrote a eulogy for Jimmy Carter all those years ago. And Stephen Ford, son of the former president, read that eulogy written by Gerald Ford at Jimmy Carter's funeral all those years later. I mean, Gerald Ford died the day after Christmas in 2006. I mean, that's over 18 years ago that he wrote this eulogy, and his son delivered that eulogy beautifully, I might add, at Jimmy Carter's state funeral yesterday. It was captivating. I watched every minute of it, and it was heartwarming that these two political rivals, Jimmy Carter, spoke at Gerald Ford's funeral. Gerald Ford posthumously spoke at Jimmy Carter's funeral yesterday through his son, and it was really heartwarming. I mean, there were the quips in there about how they disagreed on things and how they fought as political rivals do, that there were certain issues they'd never agree on. I think you're wrong about this. Well, I think you're wrong about that. But how, when it came down to just human to human, it didn't matter. If you get a chance to go back and listen to Stephen Ford's, you know, he gave his thoughts, but then he read his late father's eulogy to the former president. It was really, really captivating. I encourage you to go back and listen to it. Then one of the Mondales got up there after Steve Ford and went political about 3 minutes into their speech. And at that point, I turned it off because I didn't. I started this show talking about time and place. The state funeral for Jimmy Carter was not the place to bring up climate change, but leave it to one of the Mondales to do just that. But I digress. So rest in peace, Jimmy Carter. There's not a former president out there that I don't admire, at least on a human success level. Again, you can't get to that office without doing some good things and having an effect on a lot of people. Obviously, once you get to that office, you have an effect on all people in this country. It's an immense responsibility that some handle better than others. And again, I don't believe Jimmy Carter, even though it was he was president when I was born. Of course, I remember none of it. All I know of his presidency is what I've read and what I've heard. He was not a particularly effective president. You know, there's a general conception out there that he was in a bit over his head, which maybe he was. You know, there's a reason that Ronald Reagan was able to take the Oval Office by storm in 1980 amidst crushing economic issues, a foreign policy that had spiraled out of control in multiple different directions. Interest rates were skyrocketing. You know, I hear stories from my older siblings, my parents, you know, people that are of a generation or two ahead of mine talking about buying a home with interest rates in the teens. I mean, can you imagine? I don't know how on earth anybody did it. 12, 13% on a mortgage? That's something to be studied all its own. So, yes, as a president, Jimmy Carter, in my opinion, not the most effective, probably among the least effective, but on the day of a state funeral where he was able to do some really good things, some really good humanitarian work after his presidency. Again, he got into some other things that maybe weren't so great, but anyway, rest in peace, Jimmy Carter, our 39th president. Good long life well lived. There was somebody noticeably absent from the service for the former president yesterday. In attendance were the current president, Joe Biden, First Lady, Jill Biden, former president, Bill Clinton, former First Lady, former Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, also there. Former President George W. Bush was there, as well as his wife, Laura. The president-elect, Donald Trump, and his wife, Melania, were there. Former President Barack Obama was there. Michelle Obama was not. I have a lot of thoughts on Michelle Obama, not all of which we're going to get into right now. I'm trying my best to think of a valid excuse. I'm trying. I don't ever want to assume the worst about people. I don't ever want to assume bad intentions. I'm trying. I'm sitting here even now. I've thought about this. I mean, I thought about it all afternoon yesterday. Well, not all afternoon, but I thought about it on and off throughout the day yesterday. Why wasn't Michelle Obama there? Every former president was there. All of their spouses were there, except one. The ever-beloved Michelle Obama simply couldn't find the time to get to Jimmy Carter's state funeral. All five living former presidents, including the current one, and the president-elect, and all their spouses were there. Michelle Obama was in Hawaii. I have not read anything about her attending maybe a funeral service of a close personal friend of hers or a family member. Anything short of that, to me, when you have the resources that Michelle Obama does, she can fly anywhere, anytime, for any reason, at the drop of a hat. All she has to do is tell her people, and she's on a plane within half an hour. Somehow she couldn't be bothered to come back from Hawaii. Now, I'm looking around, even under left-wing media, to find some kind of, even just some spin. Oh, she had this, that, or the other thing. You know, some legitimate excuse. I'm going to read this to you from Politico. Politico is not a right-wing publication by any means. First, their headline, which tells you all you need to know about Politico. Here's the headline. Michelle Obama, who would have sat by Donald Trump, misses Carter funeral. Can someone explain to me what relevance that has? They have to wedge Donald Trump into every headline. And we're going to get into that too about the California fires. Michelle Obama, who would have sat by Donald Trump, misses Carter funeral. Here's Politico's reason. This is a quote. The former first lady had an unspecified scheduling conflict in Hawaii. Let me translate that for you. If this, quote, unspecified scheduling conflict was in any way something that could a normal, average, ordinary person could look at and say, well, yeah, you know, I mean, okay, that makes sense. I understand that. Do you think said scheduling conflict would not have been specified? Even Politico, who obviously knows the exact reason, they're just not saying it, at least in this particular publication that I'm looking at, even they couldn't spin it. Because in my opinion, as a former first lady, an incredibly popular and incredibly well-compensated former first lady like Michelle Obama, there are precious few reasons that I can come up with in my own mind that would justify not making it to a former president's state funeral. I'm trying to think of one short of a funeral or personal family crisis in her own circle, which clearly did not happen. I'm trying to think of another possible reason. I don't care if you had a prior engagement, if you were going to speak somewhere and, of course, you know, make your $250,000, $500,000, whatever it is, dollars per speech. I don't care if you had something like that. A former president died. You get to the funeral. As a former first lady or former president, look at the former presidents. Every single one of them was there. Every one of them. Republican, Democrat, didn't matter. Everyone there. I'm trying to think of a reason. Come on, you know, Obama lovers out there. I know a lot of you love Michelle Obama. Can anybody give me a satisfactory explanation? Even Politico, like I said, unspecified scheduling conflict, which translates to, yeah, she didn't really have a good reason. She just wasn't there, but we have to write something about it because everybody's asking about it. That's how I read that headline. But of course, the fact that she would have sat by Donald Trump, these people can't help themselves. So Trump ended up sitting next to Obama, which they actually talked. And oh, the lefties. Oh, wellness check on Don Lemon, please. They can't even handle it. They can't even handle two former presidents sitting next to each other and sharing a conversation when one of them is Donald Trump. Trump derangement syndrome is a real diagnosable thing. It might not be something that shows up in your blood, but it's one of those things, it's hard to explain, but you know it when you see it. And these people posting on their own feeds this unforgivable exchange between Trump and Obama, which who knows what they were even talking about. Maybe one of them will come out and say what they were talking about. It doesn't matter. Two former presidents sitting together at a funeral for another former president talking to one another. Could anything be more normal? Not to the left-wing media. Unforgivable on the part of Barack Obama to even engage in conversation with the former president slash president-elect who just won the popular vote and an electoral college landslide. How dare you, Barack Obama? You are betraying the very foundation of the cultish left in this country by engaging in conversation with Donald Trump. That is rule number one. Thou shall not engage. I don't even know how to describe my feeling toward that line of thinking. What are we supposed to do? Don Lemon, what are we supposed to do? Are we just supposed to continue to divert into our corners to the point where it basically becomes we don't even associate with those who disagree with us politically? Is that the ultimate goal here? Where does that end? Has anybody logically thought that through? Where does that end if we just don't associate with those who don't see things politically the same way we do? Where does that end, Don Lemon? Does that end in a cohesive United States that is united against our common enemies and united in our common interests? Is that where that ends? Because I don't feel like it does. I don't feel like it does any good to basically call out Barack Obama for engaging in conversation with Donald Trump. Where does that put us? Has anybody on the left side of this, and yes, that mentality is coming almost universally from the left in this country, where does that end? Absolutely nobody wants to think through to the next step. Okay, we're going to disown every family member, every friend, every colleague, every acquaintance we've ever had in our life that doesn't vote the way we do, that doesn't have the same political priorities, that doesn't see the world through the same lens. Disown them. Pretend like they don't exist. Kick them out of our lives, and don't even stop there. Try to kick them out of polite society. Absolutely nobody on the left side of this argument wants to think that through to the next step. So childish. It's so juvenile. And yet these people have millions of followers that dutifully obey the commands of the leader. It's juvenile. It is so absent-minded, so void of critical thought. I'm seething about it over here, if you can't already pick up on that in my voice. Throwing my arms around in an empty room. So yeah, former First Lady Michelle Obama, very obviously absent from Jimmy Carter's state funeral yesterday. Now, did you even know that? Did you even know that? If you weren't watching it, which I wouldn't have been, if I had been at work, like under normal circumstances, I might not even know that yet. Because shockingly, nobody in the legacy media felt it necessary to bring it up until the temperature was raised so high by those who aren't beholden to the Democrat Party that the question had to be asked. Where's Michelle? So eventually, even the left-wing press, like Politico, had to come out with at least, well, she had an unspecified scheduling conflict. Now, can you imagine if that camera shot from that funeral, I can tell you exactly how they were seated. Front row, President Biden, First Lady Jill Biden. Next to them, Vice President Kamala Harris, and her husband, Second Gentleman Doug Emhoff. And I use the word gentleman very loosely. It's a POS. In the row behind the president, the first lady, the vice president, and the second gentleman were, in order, former President Clinton, Hillary Clinton, former President George W. Bush, Laura Bush, former President Barack Obama, former President and President-elect Trump, and Melania Trump. Now, I want you to imagine a scenario under which seated next to Barack Obama is Michelle Obama. Seated next to her, as Politico has so conveniently pointed out for us, Donald Trump, with Melania being absent. Think about that. It would lead the news over everything else. Once-in-a-lifetime kinds of fires going on in California. Well, okay, we'll get to that. But first, breaking news. Melania Trump absent from Jimmy Carter state funeral. It would lead the news on every single network. Legacy network. It would be the headline on every single legacy media publication. Oh, Melania was in her home country of Slovenia, vacationing with family and friends, and could not make it back for the funeral. Can you imagine the media firestorm that would ensue? They already detest Melania because she's married to Donald Trump. Never once did they put her on the cover of any magazines, despite the fact of how stunningly gorgeous she is. You know, world-famous supermodel and all. Can you imagine if this particular shoe was on the other foot? They barely found it necessary to even mention the fact that Michelle Obama clearly didn't have a good reason for not coming back. She just chose not to come back, which I think tells you a lot about her. You know, those of you that continue to love this woman who, despite spending 8 years in the White House and being incredibly doted upon and unbelievably wildly overly compensated, every speech she's given ever since, among the most divisive racial figures in our national scene right now, but incredibly beloved despite all that, she blew it off. That's my take on it. If Politico won't list the reason why she wasn't there, I don't know. Barack seemed to find the time. I have to believe that a former president's schedule is at least slightly tighter than former first ladies. I mean, having never been one or the other, I can't speak on that with certainty, but it would pass the logic test that Barack Obama's schedule is probably a little tighter than Michelle's. How in the world does she not come back for that? And imagine if it was Melania. If it was Melania who was halfway around the world vacationing. That's what I'm being told she was doing. Vacationing in Hawaii. Every reasonable publication that I can find that gives some explanation as to where she was says she was vacationing in Hawaii. What if Melania was vacationing in Slovenia, her home country, with family that maybe she hadn't seen in 2 years or 5 years or 10 years? Can you imagine? Can you imagine how over the top the news stories would be about her dereliction of duty? How could she, as the incoming first lady, not attend a state funeral for a former president? I mean, I could write the script right now. So could you. It's not news to anyone, the double standard that exists in this legacy media. Every time I think we've seen the worst of it, it never ceases to disappoint. Just goes to the next level. I wonder how much accountability she's going to have to face. I'm guessing not much. There's not a single legacy news outlet that's going to go find her wherever she is in Hawaii and demand answers. Even the statement she gave. Listen to this. She couldn't even make her own statement on it. This is a statement that was presented by Crystal Carson, who is a spokesperson for Michelle Obama. Quote, Mrs. Obama sends her thoughts and prayers to the Carter family and everyone who loved and learned from the remarkable former president. End quote. Meanwhile, this very same Politico story, which is incredibly short because there isn't much to report, I want you to listen to the who's who of who was there. I'm going to quote from the article. This is from Politico. Quote, the five living presidents, Obama, Trump, Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, and President Joe Biden, were together at Carter's funeral on Thursday in a rare joint appearance. Besides Obama, they were all joined by their spouses, including former First Lady Melania Trump, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, former First Lady Laura Bush, and First Lady Jill Biden, Vice President Kamala Harris, and Second Gentleman Doug Emhoff, as well as former Vice President Mike Pence and former Second Lady Karen Pence were also in attendance. End quote. Somehow Michelle couldn't find the time. Just going to leave that one there. I debated whether or not to come on the air and discuss this issue as heated as I'm going to get about it. Because, of course, yeah, there is a line of thinking out there that, you know, now is not the time to discuss what led or what contributed to the historically destructive nature of what's going on in California. That maybe now isn't the time to discuss decisions that were made in the days, weeks, months, years, decades leading up to this. there's a line of thinking out there that, oh, this isn't the time. This is the time to help our fellow Americans. Thoughts and prayers. You know, it's not time to talk about all those things. There'll be a time for that, but that time isn't now. I disagree. In the end, I mean, I had to think about this for a while. I disagree. Yes, this is a time for thoughts and prayers and donating to the Red Cross and whatever you're able to contribute to this to help the people affected by this. Yes, this is a time for that. This is a time for pulling together and helping our fellow Americans. While I tend, at least initially on a gut level, to agree that now isn't the time to get into the failings that led to this, you know what? I've decided that that's the wrong course of action. Because what's going to happen if we decide we're not going to talk about all the failures of the California local and state governments that led to this level of dysfunction and this level of unpreparedness for something that was incredibly predictable? If we just say, no, this isn't the time, and we wait 6 months, as it always does, the news cycle is going to move on. Something is going to happen 2 weeks from now that's going to take the headlines away from this. And then something's going to happen after that. And then something's going to happen after that. We're going to get into the first few weeks, months of the second Trump term. You know all that stuff's going to lead the news. You know it. Even stuff that isn't worthy of leading the news is going to lead the news once Donald Trump's back in office. So no, legacy media. No, California. No, Gavin Newsom. No, Karen Bass. We're not going to let you go quietly into the next news cycle on this. Because that's what would happen. Other things would happen. News cycles would move on. And all of the failings, the complete and utter incompetence on so many levels that has led to where we are in California right now, wouldn't get its due assessment. So we're going to take the time, yes, even while the fires are still raging and while people are still evacuating, we're going to go through them, at least in part. Because while whatever actually started this fire may not have been preventable, the degree to which this part of the world, this part of the country, was so unprepared to face this threat, it's inexcusable. It's inexcusable, and we're not going to just let the news cycle move on. Wildfires in California are not new. It's like hurricanes in Florida. You know they're going to happen. You might not be able to pinpoint exactly where and when, but as part of the governance of an area that has known threats, you would think California would be prepared as much as a society can be prepared for something like this. The Santa Ana winds that fan these flames, that have in the past, that are right now, and that inevitably will again in the future, these are not new. These are not unpredictable. Yeah, I mean, they are in their nature unpredictable, but their existence and the degree to which they can worsen an already deadly fire situation is absolutely known. Have you seen some of the excuses out there? They really are breathtaking. Number one, Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass wasn't even in town when this first started. Now, that is not even necessarily noteworthy. People are allowed, even mayors, they're allowed to travel. They're allowed to vacation. Obviously, there's no way of knowing that this was going to break out when it did, how it did, and that it was going to deteriorate as quickly as it did. Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass was in Ghana for reasons I still don't completely understand. Somehow, there's something connected to when she was like a congressperson. She got involved with something Ghana related, and there was like a presidential inauguration going on in Ghana. I don't know. I didn't take the time to go through it because honestly, it doesn't matter to me. It doesn't matter to me where she was. Kind of like with Michelle Obama. It doesn't really matter to me where you were when this first started. You're allowed to be wherever you are for whatever your reasons are. But when the bleep hits the fan, get the hell back to your city. Again, these people don't travel like you and me. They don't have to book flights months in advance and check baggage and go through TSA and do all the things that you and I as the average traveler have to go through. These people have access to unlimited resources, private jets. You don't think they would have cleared a path for the mayor of Los Angeles to get back to Los Angeles from wherever in the world she was once this broke out? You think she would have had to just, you know, call up United and just wait for the next direct flight from Ghana to LA. She could have blazed her own trail. They would have blazed the trail for her. She finished what she was doing in Ghana and then got back. And of course, all the excuse, well, I've been on the phone with everybody and I've been doing this and I've been doing that. Well, you know what? Again, in a vacuum, okay. You finished up your obligation where you were. I don't agree with this, but at least you could not excuse it, but at least this might explain it. You finished up whatever previous engagement or obligation you had wherever you were and then came back.
Someone clearly needs to remind Karen Bass that the internet lives forever.
Well, that would all be fine if Karen Bass hadn't, on Twitter at the time, now X, absolutely eviscerate Ted Cruz and, of course, all other Republicans, because this is how these people think, eviscerated Ted Cruz, a United States senator, for not being immediately present when the ice storm broke out in Texas a couple of years ago. Do you remember that? When that ridiculous ice and snowstorm hit northern Texas and knocked out power to hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people. I mean, it was awful. It was awful. It was well documented. And yet, and no, at the time, Ted Cruz was on a family vacation in Mexico. And he did not immediately drop what he was doing and come back to his home state in its time of need. Now, you can, would I have liked to have seen him get back on a plane and come back? Yes. I would have liked to have seen that. Clearly, so did Karen Bass. But I'm sorry, Karen. Once you put yourself out, she put out a tweet. I'm not going to read it verbatim, but it basically said, see, this is a growing trend among right-wing politicians. As if any California politician would know anything about right-wing politicians of abandoning their constituents in their moment of need. That was the summation of her tweet going after Ted Cruz for not cutting his vacation short the minute that storm really turned a corner and became something far more than what it was expected to be. Okay, Karen, you want to go after him for that? Be my guest. You better be damn prepared that when that ball lands in your court, that you are ready to play ball. Because in LA's moment of need, the mayor of Los Angeles was nowhere to be found for days after this broke out. Yes, she's on the phone. Yes, she's communicating remotely. I'm going to ask you again, if the mayor of Los Angeles was a Republican, what do you think the media coverage would have been? The double standard is so stomach-turning, nauseating, to a level I have a hard time finding words for. You reap what you sow, Mayor Bass. Now, one could argue that a mayor of a city probably has a little more to do with a local community than a senator from a state. I'm not even going to make that delineation here. Do I think Ted Cruz could have come home during that storm a little earlier than he did? Yeah. Yeah, I think he could have. And I think he should have. But these people almost, they either forget that they were so out there in attacking somebody for doing exactly what they are now doing. They either forget about it, that they were so frontal about it, or they know the media isn't going to come after them in the same way they would if the parties were flipped, that they just don't care. Karen Bass clearly doesn't care because she knows the media isn't going to come after her the way they went after Ted Cruz. She knows it. So, of course, she gets back to Los Angeles, and somewhere along the way, I don't know exactly where this happened, but somewhere along the way, a reporter in an airport actually got to her. And, I mean, credit to this reporter. I didn't even know where he was from. But basically said, do you have anything to say to the victims? Do you have anything to say to the people whose houses burned while you hung out in Ghana? Do you have anything to say to these people that voted for you as their mayor, who now are standing watching their homes burn while you finish up your vacation or whatever it is you're doing in Ghana? Again, the mayor of a United States city having any obligation in a foreign country, that to me is troubling all by itself. I don't even really care what the commitment was. Just the fact that those two things are intertwining, I don't really like, at least on the surface. But yeah, this reporter went after her and she had absolutely nothing to say. Nothing. She ignored this reporter and his questions entirely. Wouldn't engage. Didn't answer at all. Could have very easily said, I'm on my way back. We're going to have a press conference. I will answer all these questions in due time. The press conference is this time at this place. Be there. Could have just said something like that. Still not satisfactory, but better than ignoring this person and his very legitimate questions on behalf of her constituents entirely. Just ignored it, like he wasn't even there. And then when she did finally speak, it was among the most garbled, unprepared. She's simply not qualified to handle this situation. Even in her statement, when she went to read off the website that people could go to find out, you know, really important information like shelters and new evacuation orders and where to find critical supplies and where to go for critical medical care, you know, things like that. She couldn't even read off the website. When she got to the part where she was going to read off the website, she said, all of this information can be found at URL. Like, that's it. URL. Now, you don't have to be a Silicon Valley level tech expert to know that URL is not a web address. This is the mayor of Los Angeles in the middle of a deadly crisis. Now, again, I'm going to ask you to put the shoe on the other foot. You remember those hurricanes, the back-to-back hurricanes that went through Florida not all that long ago? First it was Helene, then it was Milton. You remember that? Can you imagine if Ron DeSantis had concluded a press conference that incompetently? Can you imagine? Again, you don't sound like you're very down the middle, JD. You sound like you're really in favor of Republicans. Right now? Yes. There's nothing political about what I'm saying here. Ron DeSantis had Florida completely prepared for hurricanes, even though you don't know exactly how many. You might get none in a year. You might get five. You prepare all the same. California knows that its geography and its weather pattern is uniquely susceptible to wildfires. This is not new information. Much the same as hurricanes hitting Florida are not new information. But it is not political to say that Florida was infinitely more prepared to face its natural disasters than California was to face theirs. Both of them equally unpredictable in exactly where and when these things are going to hit, but incredibly predictable in the fact that they are going to hit somewhere at some point. Maybe not this year, maybe not next. But can you imagine if this level of incompetence was displayed in Florida after those two hurricanes? I want to give you an example. Again, this is not political. I am not a civil engineer. I don't know how municipalities prepare for these things, but I know that they do. I have a friend that lives in Florida that was right in the path of Hurricane Milton. Now, they live inland, so they're not getting the full brunt of the wind and the storm surge that the coastal areas, such as in Milton's case, Tampa, St. Pete, did. This friend of mine told me that their city got 14 inches of rain over the course of 2 days. Now, 14 inches of rain in an area, a low-lying area, like basically all of Florida, 14 inches of rain over 2 days would flood most cities in the United States. Somehow, in an area like Florida, where it's always tropically humid, the ground is always saturated, most of it is very close to sea level, somehow, the only water after those 2 days that had piled up, if you will, was just a tiny little puddle between his yard and the neighbor's yard. That city's infrastructure, again, I'm no civil engineer. I don't know how this is done, but clearly it can be done because cities like this one in Florida can do it. There was no standing water. The city's infrastructure, the civil engineering that was put in place to handle torrential rainfall from hurricanes or any other weather systems, were specifically designed for exactly that, handling in other parts of the world abnormal amounts of rain, but that in Florida, yes, you know these storms are going to hit. You might not get one coming through this city for 5 years, but they have the infrastructure in place to handle it because they know the threat is there. Their sewer systems, their entire body of civil engineering, all the way down to the sewers under the ground, under the streets, the size of the sewer openings to allow increased amounts of water to pass through and not back up into the streets. I mean, again, I don't understand how all of this comes together. I'm not an engineer.
but clearly there's a way to do it. He said after 2 days, 14 inches of rain, there was barely any standing water in his town, in his neighborhood. That's incredible to me, because I know for a fact that 14 inches of rain in my city, it would flood entire neighborhoods for very large periods of time. Now, my part of the world, we don't get 14 inches of rain over 2 days. We just don't. The weather pattern where I live is not conducive to that, really, even in the most extreme situations. But Florida's is. So, this particular city, now we can't speak for every city, but they had the civil infrastructure to handle it. That storm came and went, and hardly anything changed in their city. They got, by the time the storm got that far inland, 60 to 70 mile per hour wind gusts, and 14 inches of rain over 2 days. Sounds pretty terrible for most cities in the country. They were prepared to handle it. They had the infrastructure and the emergency preparedness to be able to handle it. I'm just laying out to you that there are ways for cities and states to prepare for natural disasters. When you know you are in an area that is susceptible to a certain type of natural disaster, aka Florida, with hurricanes. Earthquakes and wildfires in California are not new. You don't know when they're going to hit, but you know that they're going to hit. You know it's going to happen. That's why in California, they don't build buildings the way they do in Kansas. They have to build them to withstand earthquakes, at least as much as humanly possible. In the cornfields, we don't have to build homes that can withstand earthquakes because we don't generally get earthquakes. The dereliction of duty in California is something to behold. California has had devastating wildfires before. You've heard about them. You've seen them on the news. They're heartbreaking. As beautiful a part of the country as California is, its geography lends itself, sadly, to the susceptibility to wildfires. Now, as more and more of these happen, we learn more and more about what triggers them, under the worst circumstances, how bad they can get. Think back to Hurricane Katrina. Now, Katrina was a once-in-a-generation kind of storm. And obviously, New Orleans, being on the Gulf Coast, had certain measures in place to deal with hurricanes. All of those measures failed during Katrina because Katrina was a uniquely deadly storm, specifically for an area like New Orleans that is actually below sea level. We, America, and specifically Louisiana, New Orleans, learned a lot, a very painful, costly lesson, but as is the case with most disasters, we learned a lot. In the years that followed, New Orleans built a levee system that dwarfed anything that existed before it, because now we understood the nature of the risk. We understood that a uniquely strong storm like Katrina, which may never hit New Orleans again in our lifetimes, but is possible, we learned what could happen. So they built a state-of-the-art levee system that now can handle a storm much like Katrina, whereas before, the levee system, the engineering that was in place before Katrina, could not. And Katrina, at the cost of many lives, exposed this vulnerability, and that municipality, that state, that city, they took the necessary steps to vastly increase the likelihood of a better outcome should another storm like Katrina ever hit that same area again. They did what they had to do in response to an unprecedented, in that area, natural disaster. California has experienced deadly wildfires fueled by the Santa Ana winds before, after dry years, dry seasons. New Orleans made the necessary changes. It sure doesn't look like California has, and we'll get into some specifics here as to what they could have done but didn't. In the years, decades even, leading up to this, imagine if New Orleans had just rebuilt the exact same way. The same levee system, same civil engineering, same everything as before Katrina. Do you think that would have been acceptable? Even though the likelihood of another storm like Katrina hitting New Orleans is incredibly remote, do you think it would have been acceptable had New Orleans just rebuilt exactly as they had before and just sat there and waited for another Katrina to come and obliterate the entire city and flood entire neighborhoods again? No, because they had new information. Katrina, again, at the heartbreaking cost of thousands of lives, exposed glaring weaknesses around New Orleans on a civil engineering level
that made it uniquely susceptible to storm surge and severe hurricanes like Katrina. What they had wasn't sufficient. They learned it, a painful lesson, but they learned it. What has California done? What has California done that's any different from what they did 50 years ago? Well, it turns out not much. Like I said, these fires in the area of Los Angeles are well documented. And everybody knows they're going to happen again, simply because of the geography. We know they're going to happen again. Did you know that the Los Angeles Police Department's budget was cut by $17 million? $17 million cut. That didn't happen 40 years ago. That happened last year. Startling, isn't it? That an area that already knows what its greatest vulnerability is would cut to that level, to any level, but to that level, the one department that could help them deal with it and help people and save lives and save property, at least do everything they can, cut the budget by $17 million. That's Karen Bass. That's the LA government, LA local government hard at work. Now, yes, California does not receive much rain. For as much territory as they have, at least Southern California, once you get out of the mountains, it doesn't get a whole lot of precipitation. This is not new information. But if you listen to what these local politicians, all the way up to their governor, Gavin Newsom, who we have talked about at length on this show in the past, well, it's just climate change. Just climate change. Shake your hands and walk away. Climate change. I'm sorry, I didn't know climate change could start fires all by itself. Now forget how there is absolutely zero, and I do mean zero, evidence at this point to say that climate change is responsible for these fires breaking out in California right now. Zero evidence to that. They say that anybody going after local government or their state government for their lack of preparedness is simply politicizing the tragedy. I'm sorry, it's not politicization to point out failures where they obviously exist. And I'm sorry if a lot of those failures in this case come down along political or ideological lines, but there have been a lot of people putting out an awful lot of warnings saying, you guys are not prepared for what could happen. You're not doing what you need to do to mitigate this risk. You're never going to be able to eliminate the risk because geography, nature always wins. You're never going to be able to completely eliminate the risk of wildfires in California, but it is the job of local and state governments to mitigate that risk. Take every possible step to reduce the possibility of the worst possible outcome. That is what state and local governments can do to prepare for these situations. And there were people all over the ideological spectrum warning California for months and years, you're not ready. What you're doing is inadequate. You do not have the capacity to handle raging wildfires hitting your suburbs and your cities. You could have it. Here's how you could do it. You don't have it right now. That's not being political. To call out the people in power who have the ability to make these decisions and make these preparations and actively be part of mitigating that risk, that's not being political. And you don't get to just wipe away criticism because you don't think it's right under the circumstances. You think it's being political for people to attack you for your failures. Your failure to prepare your city, your county, your state for something that everybody knew was a huge risk. And that people have been saying, you aren't ready. You're not, this is not good enough. Whatever you've done so far ain't it. You need to do more. Here's what needs to be done. Here's how you could do it. Well, surprising absolutely no one, the Karen Basses of the world and the Gavin Newsoms of the world, well, they're smarter than everybody else. They have better priorities. They have higher level priorities. They have morally superior priorities, like spending hundreds of thousands of dollars of the LA Fire Department already decreased budget on LGBTQ causes. Why is any government money going to an LGBTQ cause? I don't want government money going to LGBTQ causes any more than I want government money going to Catholic churches. I say that as a Catholic.
You know, I know we weren't prepared for the latest wildfire outbreak, but man, we had a killer float at the Pride Parade.
What are we doing? These people that walk around with seven-figure salaries, with arrogance that is impossible to quantify, with superiority complexes that are dripping with disdain for the average American. What exactly do these people do for a living? Gavin Newsom, what do you do? Karen Bass, what do you do? Isn't part of local government's responsibility to prepare their whatever they're in charge of, their city, county, state, whatever it is? Isn't disaster preparedness like way towards the top of what these people do for a living? You want to go to a pride march on your own time? Go right ahead. Go to church on your own time. Go to a pride march on your own time. I don't give a crap. But when this stuff, these things that governments should have absolutely zero involvement in, when these things, these social issues somehow float to the top of the priority list, thereby knocking down trivial things like emergency preparedness and fire department budgets in uniquely fire-prone areas, I think it's time to take a step back and reassess your priorities. I really think it's time, because this stuff has real life consequences, and there are hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people right now living the consequences of these decisions. Even some of the local news reporters can't help themselves. Somebody can say something completely obvious like, fire hydrants are running out of water. Like, it's provable. Fire crews are leaving neighborhoods to burn because they have no water with which to fight the fires. Somebody can say something that obvious, that provable. Here's how some news networks choose to cover that.
Mayoral candidate and real estate developer Rick Caruso criticizing the city's response to the windstorm and fires. He says officials should have been more prepared.
The real issue to me is twofold. We've had decades to go remove the brush in these hills that spread so quickly. And the second is, you got to have water. And my understanding is the reservoir was not refilled in time and in a timely manner to keep the hydrants going. So that's a failure, whether on DWP's part or another city agency. But this is basic stuff. This isn't high science here. And it's all about leadership and management that we're seeing a failure of. And all of these residents are paying the ultimate price for that.
Despite what you have heard from Caruso, no firefighters have told us that they are running out of water.
And let's go out to Gigi Graciette. She is live in Pacific Palisades. I know your signal's not the best, but Gigi, what can you tell us?
Well, firefighters have told me they have no water on this block, and you may be able to make out the ember storm that we're in the middle of right now. This house is going to be a total loss. They have no water to put on this fire. They are standing by because they're trying to save the home that is next to it.
Rick Caruso was the challenger to Karen Bass in the most recent LA mayoral election, simply pointing out an indisputable fact that because of decisions that have been made leading up to this, fire hydrants were running out of water when it was absolutely needed the most. He's pointing out an obvious fact as neighborhoods are burning. After which, the quote-unquote news anchor can't wait to dismiss him. I mean, you heard him. You heard him. That was the anchor. Despite what Caruso says, no firefighters have told us that they're running out of water. After which, his co-anchor, they immediately cut to breaking news in the street, and the first words out of the reporter's mouth, the person that's actually on the ground, in the middle of the fires, her first words are, firefighters here say they have no water. This is one single newscast. That whole clip was less than a minute and a half. You heard somebody lay out the case for, this is a failure, and here's why. Here's what led to this failure. Then you've got the news anchor dismissing that argument as completely unfactual, and nobody's told us that. Here, let's cut to our reporter in the field, who then 100% confirms the argument that news anchor just dismissed. Gee, wonder why there's no credibility left in the media. What an embarrassment. The person before the anchor and the person after the anchor both confirming the obvious, while the anchor in the middle says, "Oh, there's no proof of that. No firefighters told me that." Dripping disgust. And you know, for how accepting and loving the left in this country claims to be, let me read you a tweet here from, I don't know who this person is. This is a person on Twitter that goes by the handle @DougWall1, calls himself Lovable Liberal and his old English sheepdog. Dog's cute. Let me tell you what this person had to say about James Woods is an outspoken conservative voice in Hollywood, an area of the world that does not have a whole lot of at least outspoken conservative voices. Let me tell you how accepting and loving this person is. This is a quote. This is a post on X from @DougWall1, who has 49.9 thousand followers. He calls himself, quote, "a follower of Jesus who votes blue. My mission in life is to take back Jesus from the people, (parentheses) the religious right, who have hijacked him. Pro-choice, BLM, !, USA. I don't think that's how Jesus works, Doug, but that's a discussion for another day. He says, quote, "Do you," in all caps, "do you feel sorry for him?" Actor James Woods, who has publicly expressed doubts about climate change, was forced to evacuate and appears to have lost his home to wildfires caused by climate change. Your thoughts, end quote. And then it has a picture of James Woods and a little tiny picture in picture of his house burning. See, this person's got it all figured out. Just ask him, what's climate change? James Woods doesn't think climate change is at work here. Translation, he deserves to lose his house. Didn't you hear Doug? He said he appears to have lost his home to wildfires, quote, caused by climate change. See, Doug's got it all figured out, big-hearted liberal that he is. Here's another person, 31.6 thousand followers, calls himself a shameless apologist for liberal democracy. This person posts a picture. Now, I don't know if this is real or not. He says this is from his apartment or his home. He says, quote, "I'm watching the Hollywood Hills burn, not far from my home, and I am overcome with rage and contempt." Okay, we're good so far. "That our president-elect is berating our mayor and governor rather than showing some solidarity with the citizens of this country he claims to love." See, that's who's this person. This is Mike Brock on X, @BrockM. Over 30,000 followers. He's directing his rage at Donald Trump, you know, because Donald Trump is completely responsible for the wildfires and the lack of preparedness for said wildfires in the deepest blue state in the country. He's rage tweeting about Donald Trump while ostensibly standing on his porch watching the fire get closer to his home. That's how he best feels he can spend his time. Rage tweeting to his 30 plus thousand followers about Donald Trump. Are you convinced that TDS is a real thing? Trump derangement syndrome? How delusional do you have to be when you're watching fire encroach on your own home and you might only have minutes to evacuate? Really? Rage tweeting about Donald Trump. That's how you're going to spend your time. In a state that has not had a Republican voice of any consequence since at least 10 years, and that was just a governor. The state's been run by Democrats for decades. You think Donald Trump has more control over the emergency preparedness of California than its own mayors and governor? There's no reasoning with that. You know what? Let's play that out. Let's say that these climate change cultists, let's just say they're right. Let's go ahead and say that this fire was caused wholly and completely by everything these people preach as climate change. Let's just grant them that for the sake of what I'm going to say next year. Does that in any way excuse this level of unpreparedness? How can you have reservoirs that can't be refilled fast enough? You live
on an ocean. The biggest supply of water you could ever hope for is but miles away. Now, I've already heard people say, you can't dump salt water on fires because it's not good for the environment. It's not good for the plants. It might make some of the local vegetation wilt and die. So you can't use salt water to fight fires.
As ridiculous on its face as trying to not potentially harm a plant with salt water that is just going to end up burning in a raging inferno, forgetting how idiotic that is, what about Donald Trump himself has talked about this in the past. What about the snowmelt from the mountains that was dumped into the ocean on purpose within the last couple of years after a particularly rainy year in California and snowy year in the mountains? They didn't know what to do with all this water. So they just opened up the levees, opened up the channels, and let it out into the ocean. There's something to do with, like, protecting smelt was one of the reasons that the ocean water isn't being used in some way to help in wildfire preparedness. It blows my mind that a region that is closest to an unlimited supply of water can claim we don't have any water. And this is, again, there's so much at work here, and this is getting so much longer than I wanted, but I heard a story yesterday that the voters in California have been approving funding for increased reservoir capacity and building new reservoirs since the late 1970s. The last new reservoir built in California in these fire danger areas was in 1979. Voters have been approving ballot measures for additional reservoirs for firefighting capacity for decades. But the uber off the rails environmentalists that control the government in California won't let them happen because of things like the smelt population, which I have nothing against smelt. I do find it very hard to believe that the only place on the planet where smelt are a thing are the Pacific coastal areas off of California. I find that very hard to believe. But these are the kinds of governmental roadblocks that get in the way of very basic actual government responsibilities like emergency preparedness. The unbelievable amount of bureaucratic BS that has to be gone through to simply build a reservoir. Build a dam. Not for the purpose of industrializing that area. No, in this case, for the purposes of emergency preparedness, being able to handle wildfires of an immense scale, beyond anything you'd ever even think you would need. This is the kind of stuff that's in the way in places like California, and to a large extent, our federal government. These layers upon layers upon layers, and I see it in my own community. When somebody in this area wants to, God forbid, go to an old mining site and start mining again, even for other things, these things are caught up in environmental studies and impact studies and on and on and on for years at a time, to the tune of billions of dollars going up in smoke. And this is just another example of that happening in California. You're so worried about the environmentalist and the environmental impact of basically holding water somewhere that you lose the forest through the trees. What are you doing as a local government? You are protecting your citizens. With a bullet point, number one, protect your citizens. Well, what are the threats in California? Well, you've got the human threats, of course, but you've also got natural threats because of the geography in which you live. You know that wildfires are a unique threat to your area. You need to go above and beyond to make sure you've done absolutely everything you can. And here they are talking about smelt. Environmental impact studies that take years. You've already established the need. Okay? We need more reservoirs. We don't have the water capacity to keep our hydrants functioning during a crisis. Because, yeah, municipal water systems and fire hydrants, no, they're not built to handle forest fires. They're built to handle house fires. Well, in California, you know that it's very possible to have entire neighborhoods burning at once because of environmental factors.
weather factors, winds. Your number one priority is to make sure you can protect your citizens in their moment of need. No, the uber environmentalist kooks that are in high levels of government in cities across California and in their state government, and to a vast degree in the federal government, 1979. You're talking over 40 years since the last reservoir was built in California, when everybody knew this entire time of the need for more capacity. This is what I mean when you have one line of thinking. What did I say about blind spots? Well, yeah, your environmentalist group, you know, the environmentalist activists, well represented in California state government, clearly. What about the people who, you know, nobody wants to see the environment poisoned. Nobody wants to see that. To hell with anybody who thinks otherwise or says otherwise. They're lying to you. Well, Republicans just want dirty air and dirty water. Grow up. For the love of God, grow up. But what about the person that says, okay, I understand the environmental concern here. What about the human concern? Like, if a fire breaks out and this particular reservoir project is caught up in year 2 of 9 of environmental impact studies, what about the people who lose their entire lives to a fire that, had we just built the reservoir and dealt with whatever environmental impact happened along the way and mitigated any potential adverse effects to the environment? Maybe we could have saved that neighborhood. Maybe we could have saved that house. Maybe we could have saved that family. This is what happens when your rigid ideology gets your priorities so out of whack that you are more concerned about the environmental study of a reservoir than you are lives of actual citizens. When you're worried more about the smelt population offshore than you are about Pacific Palisades. Like, the entire city has basically burned to the ground. This is where the stars live. I said on this very show, not a month ago, that rigid, one-way ideological thinking creates blind spots the size of small planets. Here's another one. You're so worried about performing for your environmentalist base that, look how much I care. I'm not going to let this project go through because we need to go through 15 years of environmental studies to make sure that this doesn't adversely affect the environment. See how much I care? See how high my morals are compared to anybody else's? Look at me. Meanwhile, in the background is this fire starting and all the perfect elements for fire. Go ahead with your climate change. Go ahead. Run with it. You should be all the more wanting to make sure you are prepared for apocalyptic kinds of wildfires. If you are a subscriber to the climate change religion, it should give you all the more motivation to prepare for something worse than you ever even think could happen as far as being prepared to fight these fires. Somehow, this particular group of people, Gavin Newsom included, is a full-throated advocate of climate change, but yet does absolutely nothing available to him to prepare for the inevitable consequences of the climate change to which he is so thoroughly convinced of. How can you on one side say, yes, climate change is absolutely real, it's making everything worse, hurricanes stronger, fires stronger, winds stronger, and then not do anything remotely resembling emergency preparedness to handle a wildfire of that level? You said yourself the wildfires are going to be worse than ever before because of climate change. How do you not prepare? How do you let these reservoir projects get hung up in bureaucratic BS for years at a time if you're so thoroughly convinced that climate change is making everything weather-related worse? You can't have it both ways. You can't say everything's going to get worse because of climate change and all you climate deniers, and then over here, not do anything to prepare. Again, I ask you, what if Florida was this unprepared for hurricanes? What if Ron DeSantis got on the air during those two most recent hurricanes and said anything remotely close to what Gavin Newsom told Anderson Cooper not 2 days ago?
What is the situation with the water? Obviously, in Palisades, ran out last night in the hydrants. I was trying to firefighter on this block. Yeah. They left because there was no water in the hydrant here.
The local folks are trying to figure that out. I mean, just when you have a system that is not dissimilar to what we've seen in other extraordinarily large-scale fires, whether it be pipe, electricity, or whether it just be the complete overwhelm of the system. I mean, those hydrants are typical for 2 or 3 fires, maybe 1 fire. You have something at this scale.
Oh, the local people will figure that out. That's the governor of California. Oh, the local people will figure that out. Why they ran out of water. And then he goes on to compare it to, well, you know, these hydrants are made to handle two, maybe three fires. Yes, in areas that are not uniquely prone to wildfires, like, say, the area you're standing in. I mean, he literally, on that clip, just puts his hands up in the air. Well, local people will figure that out. What if Ron DeSantis had done that in Florida? Where, say the sewer system where my friend lives was built to handle 2 or 3 inches of rain at a time, like, you know, they are in most of the country. Wouldn't people have called him out to say, yeah, but you don't live in most of the country. You live in Florida, where torrential heavy rains from tropical weather systems are incredibly common. That's why the city infrastructure where my friend lives is built to handle 14 inches of rain in 2 days. But if he had gone on the air and said, well, you know, our system's built to handle 2 or 3 inches of rain like every other system in the country. There's nothing we can do about it. Absolutely embarrassing. And even uber left Democrats are losing their patience with the administration in California. This is a very noted Democrat, Anna Kasparian. When you start losing the Anna Kasparians of the world as a group of Democrat leadership, I think you've crossed the dangerous precipice. This is what Anna said in an ex post. Quote, California, and especially Los Angeles, is controlled by Democrats. They are responsible. No more passing the buck. This is a very loyal Democrat saying this. Quote, our mayor, who was in Ghana as fires exploded in our city, cut the fire budget by $17 million. Endless amounts of money funneled to BS scammer homeless nonprofits. We're the highest taxed, yet we have encampments and squalor everywhere. Even worse, we don't have enough firefighters to respond to the absolute disaster we're experiencing right now. Rather than conserve the record rain we got last year, we just drained it into the ocean. We are a failing city run by a sick excuse for local government. You want to radicalize people against the modern Democratic Party? Send them to LA. End quote. Every bit of that is 100% true. It is perfectly fair to call out these blatant failures by these people who go on there and preach to the rest of the country that we all need to follow California's lead because California, in their 11-figure debt, has it all figured out. Their record homelessness and their complete lack of emergency preparedness when every indication was out there. Whether you are a full-throated climate change believer or denier, every bit of evidence was necessary to know that simple geography of California and history of wildfires leaves them in a position where they have to be ready for the worst. And they weren't. You heard Gavin Newsom. Local. Local people figure out why their hydrants didn't hold up. Unbelievable. And this guy wants to be president. No, thank you. It's not a criminal lack of preparedness. At least I don't think it is at the moment. But this is such an embarrassment of local and state government. I'm sorry. That's not being political. You do everything you can. And yeah, sometimes Mother Nature's just going to win. But it is so painfully obvious that no, not everything possible was done here. In fact, quite the opposite. But, you know, at least the LAFD had a great spot at the Pride Parade last year. One last thing I want to share with you. Michael Schellenberger, who was very big into green energy under the Obama administration, worked for Solyndra, and has since woken up. He still has all his beliefs from before. He does believe in the effects of climate change. And, you know, he still holds a lot of more left-leaning beliefs, but he's not afraid to be a truth teller. He's not afraid to call out the BS when it's there to be called out. All these people going on, they're saying, well, it's climate change. Well, it's climate change. Well, it's climate change. Michael Schellenberger put out stats don't lie. I'm looking at this annual rainfall chart. It goes back as far as 1877. I'm looking at it with my own eyes right now. There is no discernible trend at all. I'm looking at it right now. Average annual rainfall downtown LA from 1877 to 2024. There is no statistical trend on this chart whatsoever. Here's his quote on it. Michael Schellenberger, quote, some reporters and scientists are blaming climate change for the lack of rain in LA. It's ridiculous. There's no trend in annual rainfall from 1877 to 2024. We have wet years and dry years. Climate change isn't responsible for the LA fires. Gavin Newsom and Karen Bass are. And he followed that up with, quote, instead of addressing the fire catastrophe destroying Los Angeles, the top Democratic lawmakers in California have been meeting to discuss how to sue the Trump administration. You can't make it up. End quote. That's what California governments are focused on. Hyper-focused on going after the Trump administration, which isn't even in power yet and has been out of power for almost 4 years. But don't worry. They're ready to sue the hell out of them once Trump takes office. So don't you worry, California. They've really got your back. They might not prepare on even the most rudimentary level for the impending environmental threats you face right in your own backyard, but they are locked and loaded, ready to sue the hell out of the Trump administration. Good job, California. This is twice as long as I wanted it to be. This is still developing. This is not going away anytime soon. We need to call people out. We need to call this stuff out. We're not going to let this get to the next news cycle and be swept under the rug. No more. This could have, in most ways, been prevented and in all ways mitigated. We don't ultimately know what started this fire. There are videos out there of people actually starting fires in Los Angeles. Did I tell you there's something out there going on among the human race that I just don't understand? There's videos of it. They're out there. This is not a conspiracy theory. It's happening. People have started fires on purpose. How the initial one started here that started all of this, we don't know. We might never know. People that know a heck of a lot more about this stuff than me will hopefully figure it out. But the government bureaucracy that have prevented all kinds of prevented measures, the environmentalists preventing any kind of forestry management throughout the most fire danger areas of California, where you're not even allowed to go in and clean up the blowdown and the trees that have fallen and the dead brush that are at work as nothing more than an absolute tinderbox for wildfires when they do break out. There are means of mitigating this risk that include controlled burns, cleanup of blowdown and dead brush. There are people out there saying, no, you don't go into the forest and clean up the blowdown. You let nature run its course. Well, this is nature running its course. It doesn't stop for elementary schools when the fires start. It doesn't stop for neighborhoods or your lifelong family home. There are ways of mitigating fire risk that are well-known, well-tested, and could be very, very effective, especially in a place like California. But the government overreach inevitably gets in the way. Environmental regulations that fly right in the face of emergency preparedness. It's not just that cleaning up the forests and mitigating fire risk is not a priority in California. It's actively advocated against by a lot of these groups. That's why these things get so out of control. All they need is fuel. And all this blowdown, the dead brush, the stuff in the, you know, the lack of forestry management in that state, it just works like a box of matches. A can of gasoline every 10 feet, another source of fuel. There are ways to control this. California has chosen not to. And it is not political to point that out. And it is not inappropriate to point that out as it's happening. Because the further we get away from this, once, God willing, this crisis is behind us, the further we get away from it, the less you're going to remember how angry you were. And the less we're going to remember how obvious some of these solutions were that California actively decided not to pursue. I sat down and said, I'm angry. I'm angry on behalf of these people. Yeah, they voted for a lot of this crap and a lot of this incompetence. But all the same, you never want to see another human being suffer. You never want to see a family destroyed, a home destroyed, a neighborhood destroyed, lives upended for who knows how long it's going to take. And then they're just going to sit back and wait for the next wave of wildfires. Because unless California does an absolute about face on how they plan for things like this and how they try to mitigate these risks, it's inevitably just going to happen again. One last thing I want to say here. People were posting all this stuff about how State Farm, the insurance company, State Farm, canceled a bunch of homeowners policies in California. Well, that's not the end of the story. What
people that post little headlines like that fail to include is that California capped what insurance companies were permitted to charge. Now, I am no fan of insurance companies, and I'm certainly no fan of anyone involved in an insurance company making an eight-figure salary, and we will get into all those things in the near future here. But insurance companies have to be able to charge enough to cover their exposure, to cover the risk. California decided that there was a number that insurance companies could not exceed, a percentage that insurance companies could not exceed. They capped what insurance companies could charge. So what does the insurance company do? They're not just going to sit there and allow their business to be overexposed to the point where if the worst does happen, they can't cover the losses because they weren't allowed to charge enough on the front end to help pay for the destruction on the back end. Oh, damn you, law of unintended consequences. It strikes again. California decided to supersede the market and get involved in something they absolutely should not be involved in, i.e. what private insurance companies are permitted to charge for insurance coverage. You know what, Gavin Newsom? The market will figure that out. Because if an insurance company gets a little too big for their britches and starts to charge too much money, competition is what solves that problem. Other insurance companies will charge less. And that's how you control costs, is you don't control them at all, Gavin Newsom. You let the market handle it. Because when the government gets involved, it is a 100% screw-up factor. And here is the latest example of that. There's a segment of the online crazies out there lambasting State Farm for canceling these homeowners policies without giving you the detail that California capped what they could charge. So instead of just waiting for the inevitable to happen, State Farm, which is in the business of mitigating risk and assessing risk and pricing for risk, said, if you're not going to let us charge what we need to charge to cover our exposure here, we're out. We're not just going to sit here and wait to be bankrupted by the next inevitable wildfire that blows through a California neighborhood. But see, it's the insurance company that's the problem, not the government overreach that led to State Farm making such a drastic decision. No, it's just State Farm because they're a big, bad, nasty insurance company. Again, I'm not here to defend insurance companies. But you people on the Uber left, you keep making me do this. You keep making me go to bat for these insurance companies. The Brian Thompsons of the world who lost his life at the hands of an assassin because he's the CEO of United Healthcare. You make me defend these industries. No, I don't agree that the man should be making $10 million. I also don't agree he should be gunned down on the streets of New York. No, I don't like the fact that homeowners insurance in uniquely weather-prone areas like California have reached such astronomical levels that it's almost impossible for the average person to afford. But you make me come to the defense of the insurance company when your answer to it is price controls. Say what you want about insurance companies, they're awfully good at assessing risk. And they will price it at such a level to make enough money to stay in business while covering their expected exposure to natural disasters or whatever it is they're covering a home against. Say what you want about insurance companies, they know how to measure risk. And State Farm, for example, assessed the risk of charging less than they absolutely needed to basically cover their own costs and stay viable. They looked at California and said, if you're going to control our pricing, we're out. I don't blame them for that. Yes, do I feel bad for the homeowners who had their homeowners policies canceled literally within the last couple of weeks or months? Well, of course I do. But you gotta scrape beneath the surface to find out really why that happened. It's not because State Farm is a big, bad insurance company and we're taught to hate big, bad insurance companies. As much as you want that to be the truth, and as much as that is our tendency, that is our gut reaction, you gotta scrape beneath the surface. California capped their prices. And they said, we can't function like that. We're out. Which just left homeowners exposed to the worst, and inevitably the worst happened. Way too long here. I got more I want to say on this, but in the interest of not taking up your entire day, we're going to wrap here. We will get back to this and so much more on the next episode. I thank you so much for joining me. Please continue to join me in praying for the residents of California that are dealing with this unimaginable and seemingly, at least right now, unending nightmare that just seems to be getting worse by the day. Join me in praying for them, for their safety, for the comfort of those who have already lost loved ones, who have already lost homes and livelihoods. Continue to join me in praying for everyone involved in this unimaginable tragedy. This has been Spin Sold Separately. I am JD. Don't be a jerk. Pray for our fellow Americans, and I'll talk to you next time.